Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countout, the show here at youtube.com/Steven Larson, where we count things down in the world of wrestling. And, oh boy, we got a humdinger for you today in honor of the reunification of The Shield, one of the most dominant factions in the history of the modern day WWE.
Yeah.
We're going to count down the top 10 wrestling factions of all time. And of course, you can find us at Pro Wrestling Tees. Why did I just say Pro Wrestling Tees? I was going to segue very gracefully into saying, if you want to support Going In Raw, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com.
There's nothing graceful about it.
There's nothing graceful
about
that. We are on the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. If you want to support the show, and we got a bunch of reward tiers you can check out. Also at Pro Wrestling Tees at prowrestlingtees.com/Going In Raw. This shirt is for patrons only. At the $50 mark, you put in $50, we'll get you this shirt, a bunch of other crap, and then you can get off the $50 train if you want.
You only have to give us one $50 bill to get that shirt.
Yeah.
You can drop back down to $1.
It's a quality shirt.
You could just stop after 1 month and still get that shirt.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today? Oh, you said that already. Factions.
Factions. Bullet.
Whoa, hold on. We're not there yet. Save that for that entry.
All right. Fine. Let's get into it then. Number 10.
10.
Chaos. Yeah, we're doing factions from New Japan as well.
Of course we are.
Because we love us some New Japan.
We do. Chaos started in 2009 when two of our favorite wrestlers, Shinsuke Nakamura and Yano, turned their backs on Makabe, I believe, and formed Chaos.
Yeah.
Heel faction.
Yeah.
And since then, they've been one of the most decorated factions in the history of New Japan. Of course, Nakamura is a multiple-time IWGP champion, both heavyweight and intercontinental.
Mm-hmm.
The current IWGP heavyweight champion is Kazuchika Okada,
leader
of Chaos.
Even when Nakamura...
That was strange.
That was...
There's like a tremor.
Alien invasion type thing happening?
I know. There's like a really bassy tremor just shook your house.
Yeah.
Strange.
Anyways, as I was saying before I was interrupted by Martians, Shinsuke Nakamura, when he got poached by the WWE, figure, hey, you know, leader of Chaos, maybe he's... No. Kazuchika Okada stepped in as leader of Chaos, and he's taken it to new levels. It's weird that it was Nakamura and Yano. So, like... We're still learning about our New Japan stuff.
Yeah.
So we're just like, you know, reading up on it. And Yano was one of the founding members of Chaos.
And he's been the faction the entire time.
That's so weird.
The last 8 years.
Because I just figured like, oh, he's like a tangential member. But no, he was the
man.
He's
a very important piece of New Japan.
I know.
Very important. You know, like, for example, Will Ospreay, the current junior heavyweight champion, member of Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Roppongi 3K, the current junior heavyweight tag champions, members of Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the tag champs now? Oh, Killer Elite
They're
Squad.
They're Suzuki.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Roppongi Vice, former mm-hmm. junior heavyweight champions, tag team champions, Chaos.
Yeah.
Yano and Ishii.
Yeah.
Former IWGP heavyweight tag team champions, Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're... an incredibly decorated faction.
Well, here's the thing about New Japan that I've learned. Factions are everything. Everybody's in a faction. If you're not in a faction, you're a big fat loser.
Is Kushida in a faction? Is he Taguchi Japan?
I think he's just on his own.
So factions aren't everything. Shibata was never in a faction.
Oh,
or he wasn't until he had to retire. Yeah,
he also isn't champion, and then he had to retire because he hurt his brain. And Kushida isn't champion now, is he? No, he's not. It's Will Ospreay as the junior heavyweight champion.
But he's still the ace of the junior division.
Well, just wait till Ospreay has a couple matches. He'll be ace, too.
Oh, it takes more than just a couple matches to be ace, Steve. You become an ace by having an illustrious career.
Ospreay hasn't had an illustrious career?
Well, not compared in New Japan, not compared to Kushida.
And now with the rumors of Ricochet are going to be leaving, Ricochet's going to be leaving to Taguchi Japan.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that faction is down one member. Chaos, out of all the factions, Bullet Club included... Chaos is right now, I think.
Top faction in New Japan?
Top faction in Japan.
In terms of kayfabe dominance.
Like you said earlier, Roppongi Vice, they lose their junior straps. But Beretta, he's trying to
be heavyweight
now. He's heavyweight now. And then what do? They reload with Roppongi 3K.
Yeah.
Bring in Yo and Sho.
Yeah.
And bang.
belts back right away.
Exactly. So they've got all the belts. Who's the IC champion right now? Is it still Tanahashi?
He's Taguchi Japan.
Who's he fighting? Who's gonna lose that title to?
I don't know. I thought he was gonna lose it to Sabre. That didn't happen.
Yeah, no, we both thought that one.
Yeah, that didn't happen at all, did it?
Let's review some of these subgroup names.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we're gonna go down. We have on Wikipedia here. We have some subgroup chaos names that we love. The tag team in 2012 of Okada and Yoshihashi, of all people. Chaos Ride the Lightning.
That's good.
What a great name.
That's a Metallica album. The Lightning is.
Chaos Invincible.
No, Chaos Top Team is the best.
Yeah, that's a great name.
And that was Nakamura and Yano.
I kind of like No Remorse Core.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's a really bad rhyme there.
What about Complete Players?
Forever Hooligans. Yeah, I like Complete Players.
No Limit. That was Tetsuya Naito and the Tokyo Pimp.
There you go. Well, they were in TNA. I don't know if that was exclusively just a TNA thing that they did.
Well, it says here in New Japan.
Oh, it does? Okay.
It doesn't even mention TNA.
Yeah, see, Wikipedia might have it wrong here. Anyways, Chaos, definitely number 10. But they're not the highest faction.
Well, we didn't go over our criteria. Our criteria for any of these best lists are threefold. One, being good.
Yeah, I mean, championship gold.
No, that's kayfabe. Being good is actually just being good at your job.
Oh, being good.
Like in-ring performance, promo ability, so on.
Yeah.
Two, impact. What kind of impact have you had on the industry and mainstream?
Championship
Three,
gold.
Kayfabe.
Oh, kayfabe.
One win-loss record, championships.
We just say kayfabe.
Yeah, kayfabe.
I know.
That's our criteria.
We don't say storyline success. We just say kayfabe.
Kayfabe.
All right. Number nine. The Fabulous Freebirds.
They are, they have a rule named after them.
That's making an
impact. So the Freebird rule, for those who may not know, is a team of three.
Yeah.
Any two of those three can be involved in a match, defend the titles, so on and so forth.
Yeah, right now it's only used with the New Day.
Yeah.
They use Freebird rules.
But, you know, they were a pretty huge tag team, faction, in Texas and throughout the South.
So we're talking about, of course, Michael, P.S. Hayes,
Buddy Roberts.
What does P.S. stand for?
I have no idea. Buddy Roberts and Terry Gordy, the original version of the Freebirds, not the one with Michael Hayes
and Jimmy Garvin,
because that was just a tag team.
Here's the thing. Also, one of our criteria should be legacy.
Less impact.
And the Freebirds.
Impact is part of legacy.
But like how long did their legacy extend?
Okay.
Impact is stuff like, do you have merchandise and Hot Topic?
Impact is the impact of your legacy.
No, you just made that up.
No,
on the
that's
spot.
Part of impact.
The Freebirds were much more than just the core three. There were Freebirds. They had like Freebirds 2000, I think, in TNA. It was like Lacey. No, it was the Von Erichs. Never mind. It was the Von Erichs. It was like the Von Erichs 2000.
I was going to get to the Von Erichs. So the Freebirds were a pretty popular face tag team until they turned heel on the Von Erichs and kicked off one of the top rivalries of the early
1980s. Purely sexy. P.S.
Spit on me.
Michael, purely sexy Hayes.
That's debatable.
You don't agree with that assessment?
I've seen his dance moves.
I don't know, man. I think he was all sex. 6'4", 255.
Wow, he's 6'4"?
He's more than 255. He's 6'4". Anyways, continue. I'm sorry.
That's pretty much it. I mean, they have a rule named after him.
Yeah.
They were immensely popular in Texas and in the South throughout the late 70s and early 80s. They were involved in one of the most intense rivalries of the 80s between themselves and the Von Erichs.
Oh, here we go. Offshoots. This is what I was looking for. There was the Blackbirds, formed in 1988 in World Class Championship Wrestling by Iceman Parsons. He had just teamed with Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts. Oh, okay. So they feuded with Michael Hayes, apparently after they broke up. But in his place was Iceman Parsons. He teamed up with Perry Action Jackson and Harold T. Harris to form the Blackbirds, whatever. And then there was the Extreme Freebirds in NWA Wildside by the son of Terry Gordy, Ray Gordy. He teamed up with Tank and Iceberg to form the Extreme.
Those are some names.
Oh man, that's great. Oh, this is great. The original three Freebirds briefly appeared in a match against Greg Gagne, the Tonga Kid, and Jim Brunzel during the opening sequence of the 1986 fantasy film Highlander.
That's cool. That's Impact right there.
Yeah, that's definitely Impact. But you got to mention Jimmy Garvin as well.
Oh, I know.
He was friend of Freebirds back in the day. And then when Michael Hayes and him jumped to WCW, they became, you know, there was the Freebirds then. And then I think they called themselves Bad Street after that. So, you know, there you go. Number eight.
Eight.
The Dangerous Alliance. Now, if you take time out of the equation, then the Dangerous Alliance might have had the most stacked talent.
Oh, yeah.
Out of any of these groups. If you take everybody in the Dangerous Alliance into their prime, like just put them in their prime.
Oh, yeah.
You have Stone Cold Steve Austin.
You have manager, leader, Paulie Dangerously, Paul Heyman, first of all. You have Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton.
The Enforcer, yeah.
Larry Zbysko.
Well, you had the Enforcers.
Yes.
Because it was Arn and Larry.
Rick Rude.
Yeah.
Steve Austin.
Yeah.
If you move on to the ECW version, you can include Shane Douglas.
Oh, man.
Sabu, Taz.
Go. Yeah, there you go. They had the booty version later on with C.W. Anderson, Louie Dangerously.
That was Sign Guy Dudley.
Johnny Swinger, Simon Diamond, and somebody named Billy Wiles. Who even was that guy? I don't know who that is. He looks like a backyard wrestler. At one point, he went by the name Belvis Wesley.
That is a kayfabe corner name.
Hey, Belvis. That's great. I'm sure he's a great human being. Is he still alive?
Also,
good. He's still alive.
Medusa.
Right. Oh, yeah, and Medusa, like the top woman of all time. I mean, you know, in 9-1-1, the Dark... Who is the Dark Patriot? Doug Gilbert.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Did you already mention Rick Rude?
Yeah.
Bobby Eaton?
Yeah.
There you go.
Steve Austin?
What more do I have to say? Adrian Adonis was in the AWA version.
Yeah.
Look at that. Dangerous Alliance. They didn't have as much of an impact necessarily as, like, I think a lot of these groups.
I think it's one of those groups, though, you look back on now 20 plus years later and you think to yourself, wow, that's that on the talent level, it's like, really impressive.
It's bizarrely stacked.
And it's a shame that WCW at that time, I mean, Rick Rude had a lot of success.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, granted, Steve Austin seemed to be constantly holding a belt in WCW, but it never seemed like he would move beyond the mid-card, even though he was putting on some great matches.
Yeah.
And, you know, Paul Heyman, he was still doing interesting mic work back then.
Yeah. Great name, too, the Dangerous Alliance.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, man, Michael Hayes was in the group, too, as manager. That's cool. See, like, Michael Hayes is everywhere, man.
Oh, yeah.
Number seven.
Seven.
Boiling Club. Tama Tonga. Oh, man. Okay, so Bullet Club, talk about impact. Let's talk about how you can get them, you can get their swag in a Hot Topic these days.
That's impact, all right.
I thought for sure the Bullet Club was dead and gone because for a while there,
they seemed to be on the wane after AJ left.
It felt like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks were simply interested in selling their own Elite merchandise.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like after or between Omega Okada 1 and Wrestle Kingdom and Omega's return, it really seemed like the Bullet Club was going nowhere.
Yeah, our Cody Rhodes debuted at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
And he didn't have, nobody from Bullet Club came out with him for his match.
He had the smallest Bullet Club logos on his boots.
They gave him like little stickers.
He didn't seem terribly into the idea of being in Bullet Club. But anyways, once Omega returned from his hiatus,
it was a couple things.
It gave Bullet Club a kick in the pants.
Well, it was Omega returning, but also Adam Cole leaving because that opened up that space for Cody Rhodes to come in, and they started that storyline where Cody Rhodes and him were sort of vying for role of top Bullet Club.
Yeah, and in that span, New Japan started their expansion into the States, struck a deal with Hot Topic to start selling Bullet Club, Young Bucks merchandise in their stores.
According to the Young Bucks, they tweeted out, I think today, is Wednesday, we're filming this before it airs, obviously. The Young Bucks tweeted out they just signed their deal for Funko figures. So up there, over there, we're going to have some on our daily set, on my version of the daily set, we're going to have some Young Bucks.
awesome.
Bullet Club Funko
That's
figures.
That's fantastic.
Very excited.
Of course,
about that.
Bullet Club founded by Prince Devitt.
Finn Balor.
Carl Anderson.
Carl Anderson.
And I think Bad Luck Fale was one of the original members, too.
Yeah, I think so.
And since then, granted, I know they're kind of supposed to be a homage / parody of the NWO, and at times they've had the same problem as the NWO in terms of bloat.
Yeah.
In terms of having, I mean, Captain New Japan was a member at one point. You could redub him Bone Soldier. Mm-hmm. Still not a quality addition.
No.
Nonetheless, the impact they have made can't be denied. They've been fairly decorated as well. Prince Devitt won all sorts of belts. Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows won the heavyweight tag team title several times. AJ was IWGP heavyweight champion while leader of Bullet Club, and now Kenny Omega is the U.S. champ as leader of Bullet Club.
Yeah. And here's the thing. They've made some very good moves over the past couple of months, especially. And one which cannot be understated is on the Young Bucks themselves, the Being the Elite
yes.
video. So you take a guy like Hangman Page, who is kind of, you know, a Virgil-esque thug, or who could have been relegated to a Virgil-esque thug in the group. And because of being featured in the Being the Elite videos, now his profile has risen, you know, the Where's Hangman storyline. And so now they're just elevating their own members. Marty Scurll's all over those things. He was a talented addition, or he was a great addition.
Yeah.
At first we were like, you know, does he really fit? But he seems to be all in on it. And it's really made the Bullet Club into just this really cool thing that everybody wants to be a part of. So you go to WWE wrestling shows, and it's just everywhere you see Bullet Club and Young Bucks merch.
It's a sea of Bullet Club, Young Bucks merch.
Yeah.
Now I'm just waiting for Chase Owens to get his time to shine in Being the Elite.
He'll be on Being the Elite. That's going to happen. So, yeah, he definitely needs that time in front of the spotlight. But then you also have, like, separate from that, you got guys like the Gorillas of Destiny, part of Bullet Club, and they manage to scratch out their own little niche within Bullet Club as well. Tama Tonga sort of mini feuding with Kenny Omega a little bit, again, over top dog status in Bullet Club. So you got a lot of really cool little things going on within Bullet Club. Impact these days in modern wrestling cannot be understated.
No, cannot at all.
If New Japan does have a successful or continue to have success on a bigger scale in the U.S., it's going to be largely on the back of Bullet Club is the Carl Anderson. Number six.
Six.
The Shield. Sierra, Hotel, Indigo, Echo, Lima,
I think.
Lima?
Delta.
The Shield. So they just good got job. Back together. You like that?
Yeah, that's good. When you started, I was hoping you'd make it through it, but I'm expecting you not to. Not because I don't have faith in you, because I've never heard you say it before.
Yeah. Did you get stuck on the Lima? Lima?
Yeah, I think it's Lima.
The Shield. They just got back together, and the magic of the Shield was evident.
Immediately,
when Roman Reigns, the most hated man on the planet, immediately got turned around, the crowd reaction to his music was 180 because it's the Shield music.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the Shield music.
And everybody knowing that, you know, the Shield getting back together, they're all anxious for that. Something about those three guys together. You know, it's like the freaking Beatles, man.
Yeah, I know.
You see them all together and you start to get goosebumps.
Yeah.
Of course, now two of the Beatles are dead. So now it's just if you see Paul and Ringo hanging out together. The Ringo caught a lot of flack because he was all like pro-Brexit. It's
like, oh, really?
It's like easy for you to say, dude, because he's rich.
Oh, I know, yeah.
So like if you're super duper rich. Well, he was saying, you know, it's always like the most simplified stuff with these pop guys. It's like, yeah, you know, you're betting on your own country, man. It's always best to be, you know, doing your own thing. And it's like, you're not even talking.
Doesn't
about
make a whole lot of
there's
sense.
There's no minutia there.
Let's get back to the Shield.
All right.
I think Dean Ambrose is still the longest reigning U.S. champ ever, or one of them. When he held the belt for a long time and never defended it.
He defended it all of like three times.
I know. While he was U.S. champ, Seth and Roman Reigns were tag champs for a good stretch during the Shield's initial run. After their breakup, all of them has won the WWE title. Ambrose has won the Intercontinental title. Seth has also been a U.S. title holder. U.S. title. I mean, they were only around really 2 years, and the impact they made was enormous.
Huge.
And which is evidenced by the fact that they're using Dean and Seth to help get Roman over, so when he beats Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 34, the crowd won't boo.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? A lot of people criticize the WWE. That's a very smart move. That is a super-duper smart move. And the people all love it. They're probably selling those terrible merch shirts.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Maybe the Shield could have been higher, but all their merch they've ever released has been bad. The one with the three dogs on it wasn't terrible.
Let's see here. One, two, three, four. There's only really four groups here who have like really iconic merchandise.
NWO, DX, New Day, and Bullet Club?
Yeah. Number five.
Five.
The New Day. So when they first started, we didn't really know what to think. They remember when they had like the weird like on the house show circuit?
Yeah, we heard reports that they had put together Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston, and Big E.
Like Xavier was going and like sort of recruiting Big E and Kofi. I'm sorry. Yeah, Big E and Kofi. And then it was like, well, are they ever going to pull the trigger on this? And then it was like a little while where he didn't hear anything. And then they started running those promos. And it's like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And at first, everybody was completely crapping on them. But then before not too long, you started to see what they were doing with this. Like, I remember distinctly one time Big E saying something along the lines of, we don't have anything else to hold on to. So if we don't have the power of positivity, what are we going to have? Something like that. And it was like, that's oddly ominous. Like if they start losing or something. And sure enough, they started becoming a heel faction and they started becoming kind of a goofy but really effective heel faction.
Yeah.
And of course, their chemistry, their comedic chops, their charisma, all just was way too infectious. And they had the most potent way of becoming, the most effective way of becoming a face is if you're an amazing heel first.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes. They are the longest reigning tag champs in WWE history, well over 400 days. They are currently four-time tag team champions, and they are fantastic.
The rumors are right now that Vince wants to
establish them as the top tag team in WWE history.
Exactly. So that's going to mean not just having the longest reign.
But the most reigns.
The most reigns, which right now is the
Dudley Boys with nine, I think.
With nine. And so, yeah, we're going to see if he's able to pull that off. I think it's they're already up there.
I think
it's already,
I think it's already
a thing.
I think so, too.
You know, as evidence, especially their last match, Hell in a Cell against the Usos, one of the best tag team matches I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, even taking Hell in a Cell out of it. It was fantastic.
And I think if WWE really wants to separate the New Day from any other tag team in the history of the WWE, is let the three of them defend a singles title.
That'd be great.
I think that'd be so unique, so interesting, and we'd get a whole new dynamic of the interplay between the three of them defending a singles title.
Yeah.
It'd be so cool, so different, so interesting. Put the U.S. title on the New Day.
I think that's a great idea.
I think
that'd
be fantastic.
Fantastic. Number four!
Four.
D-Generation X! Suck it!
Oh, I dropped my phone.
God damn.
I was doing my X-Pac.
I was very excited.
Cross chop.
That was great. DX, they sort of ushered in a way, the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there was parallel.
Well, the original iteration.
Right. Yeah. Sort of, it was, they existed kind of to combat, if you will, the NWO phenomenon over there. You know,
well, he had the Click members, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, kind of going head to head with Click members Scott Hall and Kevin Nash over on WCW.
Exactly, and so they figured, you know what? Now we're gonna have more contemporary characters. Gone are the cartoon characters of the past, and that just meant that, you know, they were gonna make references to dicks and stuff.
And then
like that.
Shawn Michaels would show his butt.
Yeah, he would show his butt. He'd wear like. Didn't he wear, like, really, really skimpy, like, I don't know, like a thong or something at one point? His dickhead was just, like, it was very evident. Like, you could just see every, like, detail of it through, like, the thinnest cloth.
Yeah.
It was, like, on USA Network.
Yeah.
Anyways, they popularized the phrase, suck it. They were branded amazingly with that black and green sort of palette that they had.
And their Titantron still one of the best ever.
Yeah, yeah. And ever since... You know, so Shawn Michaels, he sort of retired at WrestleMania 14. Triple H then recruited X-Pac.
X-Pac!
And the New Age Outlaws.
Oh, you didn't know?
And then eventually he just sort of ditched them all. But ever since then, and then especially after Shawn Michaels came back like 4 years later, people were chomping at the bit for more DX, more DX. And so eventually they did reunite. But nothing would ever beat like the original.
No, no. It was after Shawn Michaels had been born again, so he didn't want to do anything really do super edgy.
Yeah.
He didn't crotch chop, did he?
He did a high crotch chop.
Oh, okay.
And so at that point it was like, you know what? It was
a nostalgia act.
It was a nostalgia act already. But, you know, that original run where they were just being super inappropriate. Because also, you know, it's like, who really wants to see a couple of guys in their late 30s doing that kind of stuff? You know?
Early 40s.
Yeah. So, but they were as cool as anything in the WWE. You had the rise of them. Then, of course, you know, they did their own. They had their own battles with Vince McMahon.
Yep.
Which was kind of a precursor to his, or a parallel running to his problems with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
They brought China,
mm-hmm, yeah,
into wrestling.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
it was pretty cool when Rick Rude was their manager for a spell.
It was weird, yeah.
Until the Montreal Screwjob when he left. He
took off, and then he showed up on both shows in the same night.
Yeah.
Again, wrestling's weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, you're dealing with people with immense charisma, with great chemistry, real-life backstage friends. And it was it's hard for that not to be so infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus coupled with their great theme songs, the great branding, DX shirts, I think to this day probably still sell really, really well.
Yeah, and they were incredibly successful.
Mm-hmm.
Sean was both European champion and world champ while member of DX. Mm-hmm. Triple H eventually won the European championship, I think, mm-hmm, during the first run.
Yeah.
And then he went on to win the Intercontinental title, mm-hmm, while he was leader of DX. I think he eventually won the world belt after he ditched them, though, right?
I think he did, yeah. He had to ditch them first, yeah.
But like New Age Outlaws were tag champs all the time. X-Pac probably won a couple belts, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and of course, Triple H went on to become, like, you know,
the future leader of WWE.
Exactly. The literal god of wrestling. Number three.
Three.
The Heenan family.
So we were talking about this beforehand, I said to you, I want to put the Heenan family on here, especially this high, because after Hogan was done feuding with Piper, leading up to and directly following a little bit WrestleMania 1, Bobby Heenan was essentially top heel in all of WWE.
Sure.
So for a good 2 or 3 year span, Heenan's mission in life was to get the belt off Hogan. And so he was recruiting people and bringing them in to take that belt off Hogan. So he had feuds against Bundy, Big John Studd, and eventually Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Which led to one of the most massive main events in wrestling history, main event of WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Andre.
Mm-hmm.
But even after all that, Heenan family is like a who's who of wrestling Hall of Famers. Look at the roster. You have Andre, you have Studd, you have Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 90s, you had Ric Flair, you had Mr. Perfect, you had Rick Rude.
You had Paul Orndorff.
Yep.
Ric Flair, Red Rooster.
That's Terry Taylor.
Ken Patera.
How he wasn't a massive star is still beyond me.
The Islanders, Haku and Tama. I have no idea. I don't know. It's absolutely bizarre.
The Brain Busters, Arn and Tully.
Yeah, wasn't that like when they were like there very quickly?
Yeah,
didn't they go really, there and then come back really quickly?
Pretty much. Yeah. Oh, Harley Race was a member of the Heenan family in the mid-80s, 86, I think, when he won King of the Ring. Even going back to the AWA, where the Heenan family started, look at the roster there.
Yeah.
Black Jack Mulligan, Black Jack Lanza, Nick
Bobby
Bockwinkle,
Duncan.
Nick Bockwinkle, Stan Hansen, Ray Stevens.
Super Destroyer Mark II. Was that a robot? Oh, Sergeant Slaughter.
It sounds like it could be a robot.
That sounds like a robot.
No, that's a fair point, Steve.
Super Destroyer Mark II.
So, granted, there's been various iterations of the Heenan family, but as a whole, their run, nearly decade-long run, as pretty much the top heel faction in WWF, is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. It was during the time when WWF was really got put on the map in terms of mainstream popularity crossover. Hogan, rock and wrestling, all that crap. Heenan family was number one heel.
Yep.
Absolutely in terms of impact, for sure.
And Bobby Heenan was...
Oh, he's the best.
The best.
He's the best.
The absolute best.
Absolute best. Number two!
NWO. New World Order.
They had their own pay-per-view.
Sold out.
They had
crafted a giant toilet throne for the winner of the Miss NWO pageant.
So you can really kind of...
That's the reason for them to be much lower on this list.
You can kind of sold out with garbage. Let me ask you something. Do you think there would have been an Attitude Era without the NWO?
Probably not.
Probably not.
They brought a sense of authenticity and realism that wasn't that didn't exist in wrestling at the time.
Well, they brought a sense of cool.
Yeah.
That's what they brought that also. Yeah, so there was the authenticity, realism. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, they were both kind of like, well, you know what? They're not going to let us use our WWF personas.
And that's good because it allowed them to drop the more cartoony aspects of those mm-hmm. characters and just come off as themselves.
And it allowed people to think, wait a second, is this an actual invasion? Is mm-hmm. this really happening? And then you bring Hogan to it, and it's like, okay, well, no, I can't be because Hogan's being like super cartoonish heel guy. But it did, it made everything cool. Like that iconic T-shirt was the coolest thing.
Really
and
was.
That started like jacking up the ratings for WCW, which then led Vince to think, man, I need to really get edgier here and
yep.
cooler. And so we're going to let things happen like the DX stuff, like the Austin stuff, like yep. the McMahon character. We're getting rid of Bret Hart in exchange for Mr. McMahon, the evil heel.
Yeah.
And so the NWO ushered all that. That was the starting point. That ushered all that stuff in. And if you, you know, when you think of WCW and their most popular, biggest times, you think the NWO.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, and that gave the WWF their biggest run for their money. And, you know, to this day, what was it like? A couple months ago, it was like one of those idiot Kardashians.
Went out oh, you got a Wolfpack shirt.
Wearing
yeah.
the Wolfpack shirt. It's still cool.
It
like
is.
The design is still really cool.
It really is.
So, yeah, in terms of like everything across the board, their impact, what the kayfabe, of course, Hogan, you know, booked himself to be world champion a lot. The Hall and Nash, the Outsiders, tag team champions a lot. Scott Steiner, champion all over the place.
Six, X-Pac was Cruiserweight champion. And yeah, we mentioned bloat during the Bullet Club
entry.
Oh,
they were terrible eventually.
Yeah. For a very short time, they were cool
mm-hmm.
when they had, what, six members, I guess?
Yeah.
When it was the Outsiders, Hogan, the Giant, X-Pac, DiBiase.
Well, look, I mean,
they were still cool then.
They were cool, and then they were not kind of cool, but then they were cool again when
they
shed
up. Well, the Wolfpack was cool.
The Wolfpack was cool. They were cool.
And then they did the Finger Poke of Doom and got back together, and that was definitely not cool.
It was definitely not cool.
And it was not cool for a long while after that.
It was never cool again.
And they tried to bring him back at WWF, and it was not cool
then. That was definitely not cool. The fans were so into that not being cool that they turned Hogan face.
Yeah.
And then it was like, remember when we were watching the Going In Raw, the Raw View? Where it was Shawn Michaels, Big Show, Nash, and X-Pac. And it was like, what? That is the least. And the funny thing is, like those and Nash, those names should have been cool together.
Yeah.
But it was not cool.
I think because everybody realized that what they were doing wasn't cool.
Like, you can't tuck your shirt in.
No.
That's not cool.
It's not cool.
Yeah. But NWO, Impact, Legacy.
Enormous.
Kayfabe. All that. They had it all.
All.
You know who had it more? Number one.
One.
The Four Horsemen.
Yep.
Best faction of all time.
Easily.
They battled RoboCop.
They did. In fact, Sting brought in RoboCop in an effort
mm-hmm.
to outmuscle Sid.
To counter the power of
the
Sid.
The power, the strength of Sid. Yeah. Four Horsemen began in November of 85.
Oh, wow.
Ric Flair, Ole and Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. Dillon as their manager.
Oh, man.
And then for more than a decade, they ran roughshod over WCW, except for that time when Ric Flair was kind of fired briefly by Eric Bischoff, and he came back into that promo. Fire me! You can't fire me! Fire me! You already fired
and
me!
And
he reformed the Horsemen. Granted, Steve McMichael was a member of the group then. Well, that's not cool. But anyways.
And even after that, like, they just kind of got buried. It's funny. I was listening to, I think it was Dave Meltzer talking to Chris Jericho about Benoit, I mm-hmm. think they were talking about his career. And he was saying, I think Meltzer was saying, it's still absolutely bizarre that Eric Bischoff was so in love with the NWO that when they would go into Horseman territory, they would bury the crap out of them and just leave. People would just leave like pissed. Not like, oh, a great heel heat. Pissed.
Yeah.
Like it was, he just wanted to, instead of like maybe trying to build him back up with guys like Benoit, Malenko, stuff like that, instead of doing that, he just wanted the NWO to just bury everything. No semblance of like, you know, actual storytelling ability.
Yeah.
Just, hey, these guys are popular. Let's just keep on burying everything that could possibly pose a threat. So nothing
ever
threatened.
That's terrible.
But like you said, for a decade, they run roughshod. People wanted to be the Four Horsemen. Like they and they live that life mm-hmm. of extravagance, of excess, to the T, like yep. in real life. The Four Horsemen were the original huge faction.
Yes.
Yes. They were the best. Impact, kayfabe.
Being good.
Legacy.
I mean, they have arguably the greatest in-ring performer in the history of the, in the industry in Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Perhaps the greatest tag team specialist in the history of wrestling,
Arn Anderson,
the Enforcer.
Yeah, the Enforcer.
Ole Anderson was in for a bit. Tully Blanchard, another great tag team wrestler. And then for a while, yeah, you had people like Sid, like Paul Roma.
Hold on a second, though.
Like Steve McMichael,
you know,
and the Horsemen.
He haven't mentioned yet. Lex
Luger. Oh, I know. I feel like he's on the next level up from those guys.
I think he's the next level up. It's like Flair Luger.
Not quite.
And then everybody else. They were inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, too. Mm-hmm. So that's good, too.
Good for them.
Anyways, what a great episode of Count Out.
Fantastic.
We
informative and entertaining. See, we were good.
We were good.
Hopefully this will provide some impact
this
in terms of...
This definitely has impact.
And then kayfabe. Because
it goes on YouTube, you can watch it forever.
Yeah, and then kayfabe.
Yeah, and then kayfabe.
It'll get good views.
Kayfabe, it's definitely. Anyways, let us know what you guys think in the comments. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.